No, Steve, I consider you a great play-by-play guy. I really do, and I say that begrudgingly because I'm a Temple guy, but I gotta give it up to you.
Well, that's okay. We'll make this the Mutual Admiration Society because I think you're great. So, okay, I think you're great. Okay, so let's start with Doc Rivers. I know you have a lot of respect for Brett Brown, but the decision was made to move on. What did you think about the move with Doc Rivers?
Sixers actually got lucky because the Clippers decided to part ways with a guy who has a terrific resume, and I think that's one of the keys, because now when he walks into the locker room, you would think that he instantly commands respect from our young nucleus, particularly Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. So right there is a big key in being able to sign a guy like that. And this is not going to come cheap, because remember, Brett Brown had 2 years left on his deal. And I'm sure, and I don't know the facts and figures, but I'm sure that Doc Rivers was collecting a nice salary from the Clippers because the expectations were high and he's got a great pedigree. So now you have someone who will be able to start fresh. He'll be there on draft night. He'll be there from the beginning. And the one thing you have to know about Doc Rivers is he is a culture setter. So I think Brett Brown did a terrific job really taking something from nothing in terms of establishing a culture, but now you have someone who comes in with a lot of gravitas, and it's going to be interesting to see as he does set that culture, what tone he takes, particularly with his younger players.
Sometimes there's somebody that does what Brett Brown did, where they take it from nothing to something, but then there's somebody else who has the ability to take it the next step. Now, we know Doc was the coach in 2008 with the Celtics when they won it. Is that really the feeling you have, that here's a guy that can take that and can make that extra step?
And he is a good coach, and he has coached good players. So you refer to 2008, the team with three Hall of Famers and Ray Allen, Kevin Garnett, and Paul Pierce. Just got finished coaching Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, and the argument might be made that they should have gotten to the conference finals. They blew a 3-1 series lead to Denver. It's not like he didn't try to adjust in that game or in those games coming down the stretch. He did. There was just the ability of the Nugget players, I think, to execute. But I think Doc Rivers is a guy who will make adjustments, can make adjustments. It's going to be interesting to see who comes in on his staff, because he has to take a team now that has been assembled quite differently from a lot of the other teams in the NBA, where Elton Brand elected to go big. It's going to be interesting to see how they meld the talents, or how he melds the talents of Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons. And then, of course, there's Al Horford, and what do you do with him? Do you continue to bring him off the bench? I would say probably. Simmons, of course, was moved to the four by Brett Brown when they got back into the bubble, and that would have been the case into the playoffs. It'll be interesting to see how he handles him. So there's a lot to be undertaken by Doc Rivers, but I certainly think he has the experience and the proven track record to do it. Otherwise, the Sixers wouldn't have hired him.
All right, so we see what other people have been able to do to get to this point, especially what Miami did to get themselves to the final. When you look at this team, what is missing, or do they actually have all the parts? It's just a question of everybody finally putting together because they are so young.
I think what's missing is they just haven't reached their full potential. Joel Embiid, we know there have been constant questions about his conditioning. We know that he's a world-class talent and a multiple All-Star and a potential MVP and Defensive Player of the Year. So how do you get the best out of him? Ben Simmons, of course, people talk about his lack of a jump shot, but is Glenn Rivers the kind of coach who will simply ignore that and wait for the jump shot to come, and maybe more importantly, put Ben in positions where he can take his talents and make the best use of them? And then maybe the biggest thing is Tobias Harris, who was signed to a huge deal, who I think, because much of the offense is designed around Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons, was kind of left oftentimes with crumbs. How can you make the best of him? And maybe the best part of this is the fact that some of his best games in his career, best years of his career, we're talking about Tobias Harris now, came with the Clippers under Doc Rivers. So maybe he is the answer to the Tobias Harris riddle.
I ask you about Ben Simmons for a moment. Yeah, you mentioned the jump shot. He does so many other things along the way. Why hasn't that jump shot come along? Is it just I mean, why?
My only guess, and this is just from piecing together context clues, Steve, is that here is someone who was able to dominate as a youth player and into prep school and college as a ball handler, someone who, despite his size, had the uncanny ability through his ball handling to get to the rim and finish there or post guys up or what have you. And it never really became an issue until Brett Brown made him a point guard. And yes, he became a two-time All-Star as a point guard, but probably didn't have confidence in his jump shot, let alone a three-pointer. And so because of that, Ben just shied away from it and continued to go to the things that have worked for him since he first started handling a basketball. So it's going to be interesting to see how Doc Rivers approaches that. Does he lock him into a gym? We saw the videos last summer and the summer before of Ben and how good he was in the gym. And then we saw once again the fact that he lacked taking the jump shot, even just a couple of times a game, just to keep the defense honest. So that's a riddle that we haven't solved. It's somewhere inside of Ben's head. And at some point, we hope that he is able to gain at least enough confidence, much like a Giannis Antetokounmpo. Not a great outside shooter, not a great three-point shooter, right, but good enough that he can open up a world-class game for himself.
Okay, so what has this been like since July 31, watching all of this play out? I realize every single person that went into the bubble, and not everybody went in. I mean, very few broadcasters went in. But they had to make a lot of sacrifices. In talking to the people that were with the Sixers group and so forth, how tough was that sacrifice to make, knowing that you were locked in there for a period of time you didn't know how long you were going to be there?
So in our case, the local broadcasters did not go to the bubble because the NBA teams were restricted to 35 placeholders, if you will. So that included not only players and coaches, but supporting medical staff, equipment, right, people, and whatnot. And you can only imagine, we typically will travel 40, 45 plus to a road game. And of course, at a home game, we have a lot more. So I think it was probably pretty easy to leave us off as local broadcasters. So what we did, Steve, was we took over the hockey press boxes at Wells Fargo Center. And instead, of course, facing towards the ice and broadcasting a game, there was no game. It was just a room for us. We put our backs to the opening and utilized that space with lights that were already there. It was already pre-strung, so to speak, for audio. There were a couple of big TV monitors. We had a TV camera. And in the next booth, socially distanced from me, separated by plexiglass, was Ala Abdelnaby, my color analyst. So we were able to look at each other. We did games off a monitor. I can only guess somewhere in your career you've had the time to do that as well. It's not optimum, but with a good crowd mix and, you know, making your calls in such a way that you're sure to get them right because you're limited in how much of the court you can see, you do the games. And that's what we did, and my boss seemed to like them, and the viewers hardly seemed to notice, so I guess we pulled it off.
Yeah, no, you did. And that's what we're waiting to find out. They still have not told Jack Hamm or myself yet exactly what the situation is. We think we're traveling, not with the team, but on our own. And then basketball, the same thing. We're still waiting on that, too. So we're playing the waiting game. When it came, though, to talking to any Sixers personnel that had to be down there, what did they tell you it was like?
Well, I remember talking with one of our support staff who actually seemed to enjoy the experience. Of course, he wasn't going to stay for the whole time, so it became about a 3-week or a month-long novelty for him. But what the players had to do was they had an app and they had a wristband, and every day they got up, and they had to answer questions on the app related to potential symptoms, whether it was temperature or just not feeling well or loss of taste, all that stuff. And then they had to go get a COVID test, and they had to get a temperature check, and all that stuff had to be recorded on the app, and it would show up in their wristband. And if they went, let's say, to a team meal, and they went to a giant conference room serving the team meal, or there was a team meeting or whatever, you would take your wristband and you would wave it over some sort of an instrument, much the way you would when you're at a checkout counter at a grocery store. And if that lit green, you were okay. If it lit red, that meant that you probably forgot to get tested. So there was a lot of that where you had to be constantly monitoring yourself. Other than that, I can only imagine that it became, there was probably a certain sense of loneliness, a certain sense of boredom. And I think that the teams that have gotten this far, aside from their talent, have to have had a certain amount of mental toughness. Because remember now, the teams that are battling in the finals, they went in there, early to mid-July. It's now, July, August, September, October. It's 3 months in a pretty confined space, as much as the NBA has done a really good job of the pop-up barbershop and activity places. And, you know, you got past the first round and you were allowed to at least have your wife or significant other visit. But it still can't be easy, and I'm sure the players, once they're done there, those are participating in the finals, you know, are going to be happy they're not there anymore.
Mark, how important is it going to be for the NBA to time out the next season based on the end of this one, and what kind of role does the Players Association need to play in that decision?
So one of the things that makes Adam Silver a great commissioner is that he has involved the Players Union in every step of the way. I mean, that's abundantly clear by the Black Lives Matter on the court and the sayings the players have on the backs of their jersey and whatnot, let alone the testing regimen and everything else. So he's consulting with them right now. And according to his address, which he made to the media before game one of the finals, right now they seem to be targeting a January start date. They're playing with a number of different variables, not the least of which is quick results testing. How will that factor in terms of getting fans into the game? A vaccine, I would not think, would be available on a widespread use by that time. So I think you're pretty much looking at testing at best as it relates to fans. You want to give players a rest, of course. You want to be able to have the draft play out, which is November 18th. You want to have free agency play out and just, you know, a general rest for the players between seasons. From what I understand, Steve, even though they're starting in January, they're going to try to stuff 82 games in. So the question is, how do you do that, given the fact that in concert with the players' union in recent years, you spread out the games a little bit more, there have been fewer back-to-backs and whatnot, and you are taking aim at this summer, which presumably in Tokyo in July will be the Summer Olympics. And you would think that the U.S. would want to field a team. So how do you reconcile that vis-a-vis the fact that your season, which normally ends no later than the third week in June, now starting in January, has got to go into, you know, you would think at the very latest or the very least early August. So I don't know what form or fashion any of that's going to take, but that those are the facts as I have them to the moment.
All right, Mark. Well, I assume you've become a pretty adept at Zoom, and like we all have, which means that open invitation that you and I have talked about to talk with my class, I think they would find invaluable. So, you know, I think we could
just say the word, my man, and you got it.
Yeah, you absolutely, because you know what? There are a lot of, you know, when I open up a class, I usually, the first class, I will ask them, you know, favorite team, announcers, and so forth. Your name comes up often. So I think this class is going to appreciate getting a chance to hear from you.
I'm flattered and would be more than happy to do it. Thanks so much for thinking of me.
Oh, thank you, Mark. Thanks for thinking of us. You're the best, outstanding as always, and appreciate you. Enjoy whatever kind of off season you can have right now.
You got it, my friend, and best of luck to you no matter what happens or how it turns out.